It's showtime.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we are at the middle of the week. We managed to, well, I guess survive's not the right term, but get through the pageant last night. Jesus. And so here we are on the final day of July 2019, the 31st day of July 2019, with yet another pageant before us later this evening, and ever so much more than that. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This program, like every program at the Horn, begins with gratitude. Yes, thanks go out for our Patreon subscribers this evening. This is the night, this is the evening that we thank all of our Patreon subscribers. The way that Patreon works, everything comes out on the first of the month for the previous month. So, actually, we're talking here about June's Patreons, and then tomorrow, July's Patreons will come out. At least that's the way Patreon says that it works. But we have thanks to give out to our Patreon subscribers, and here we go. Thanks go out to Terrace in California, to Hamilton in Texas. Thanks to Brother Deacon Asa in Far Canada. Thanks to James in New York City. Thanks to Scott in Wisconsin. And to Lori. Thank you, Lori, in California. Thank you to John. And that would be John in Wisconsin. And thank you to Ruth. Thank you, Ruth, so very, very much in Ohio. Thank you, Nick. Thanks, Nick, also in Ohio. Thanks to Alex in Kentucky. And thank you very kindly to, of course, our longstanding buddy, Horst, in Taiwan. Thank you to John. John is in Maryland. Thank you very kindly to Barb in Minnesota. Thanks to Frank. Thanks to Jeremy in Vermont. Thanks to Joe in Ohio. Thanks to Jim. Jim is in California. Thank you to Annette. Thank you, Annette, in Massachusetts. Thank you to Barbara in Philly. Sorry I didn't get to see you in Philly, Barbara. I don't know I'm sorry I didn't get to meet you. Thank you to Greg in North Dakota. Thank you to Ron in Delaware. Thank you very kindly to Aaron in Maryland. To Tina, thanks, in Maryland. Thanks to Kimberly in North Carolina. Thank you very kindly to Carl in Texas. Thank you to Hung Like Jesus down around Hotlanta. Thank you very kindly. Thanks to Jenny in Wisconsin. Thank you to Vernon in San Diego. Thank you kindly to Andrea in California. And thanks to TJ in California. Thanks to Frank Fab, the sponsor of the construction a couple of summers back of the Fab machine that powers this program. Thank you to Albert in North Carolina. Thank you to Brendan. Thanks as well to Glenn. Thanks to Joanne. And thanks to Marty. Thank you one and all. Thanks as well to John and Kat in Ohio. Thanks to Joyce. And thanks to Robin. And thanks to Greg. That should mark our latest round of Patreon patrons. Thank you very, very kindly. Randy in PA wants to know, who has the cheaper fees for you, Patreon or PayPal? Well, it winds up being a little bit more expensive over at Patreon because it then transfers into PayPal, and PayPal gets a cut of everything on Patreon, too. So, yeah. I don't have to do it that way, but that's the way I wind up doing it. Wow, says Steve in New York. Ohio representing. Yeah. Isn't that cool? Yes, it is. Randy in PA also pointing out, I'm not interested in the pageant until they make their VP picks. Well, I don't know how. We'll get into that perhaps later in the evening. But again, thanks to all of our Patreon patrons. You're a big part of the quarter of the funding that our subscribers knock down on any given month. Of course, it is, as I noted, the final day of July 2019. Summer is running away. And, well, won't be that too terribly long until, dadgummit, it'll be propane season again. And by that I mean heating the otherwise unheated studio. But for now, there's no thinking about that because it's a balmy 86 in the fabulous Horn studio at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion. Brother Deacon Asa tells me that words of praise and wisdom are a-flowing through both streams from the server on high, panegyrist Kincaid. Yes. That's good to know. That means everything appears to be more or less working. We'll cross our fingers that it stays that way. But brethren and sistren, it's still hot, high summer here in the hills and hollers of almost level West by Cold Trump Virginia, Stan. And for this final prayer meeting of the month of July, the deacons knew, brethren and sistren, that they were not going to have to be passing any plates. They've gotten two straight weeks off. Well, they're deacons. I don't know how straight the weeks were. But the deacons got two consecutive weeks off, and they're feeling downright saucy. And so they made a request to the little old blue-haired ladies and the little old blue-haired men in the fellowship hall dining room. And so they hauled out, the little old blue-haired ladies did, they hauled out and gussied up and cleaned up the ice cream machines and sent the deacons out. We're sustainable ice cream makers at the cathedral. These are cranked kind, not the electric kind. And so we had to get some of the youngins there to turn the cranks. That's the thing with youngins. They'll think that work like that, and it's work, is fun, as long as you tell them there's some ice cream at the end of the rainbow. So, meanwhile, having seen the miracles of the new propane griddle, the little old blue-haired ladies insisted on having one for the Cathedral of Common Sense Fellowship Hall kitchen. And so it was that, yes, a whole bunch of garden fresh, warm from the sun, tomatoes were acquired, bacon was purchased, lettuce was gathered in from the produce section, good sourdough bread was bought, Amish American white cheese was sliced. And so it was BLTs this evening in the Fellowship Hall dining room for Fellowship Hall Wednesday prayer meet and dinner. Mm-hmm. And then, Yes. Little old blue-haired ladies made some buttery yellow pound cake, and they hulled some strawberries and sliced them and covered them in sugar and let them sit and develop that lovely syrup. Got a few cans of whipped cream, managed to keep them away from the deacons to keep them from huffing the propellant. Deacons, what are you going to do with them? And so, yeah, there were potato chips and pickles and BLT sandwiches and some potato salad. Homemade, of course. None of that stuff out of those plastic tubs. The little old blue-haired ladies won't put up with such nonsense. And then there was homemade ice cream with strawberries and yellow pound cake and whipped cream on top. It was gone in an instant. You know, the book talks about the twinkling of an eye. There wasn't even any twinkle time. It just all disappeared. And mercy, I want to tell you that the deacons became downright sluggish. But nonetheless, they did manage to lug their pendulous bulk up the couple of flights of stairs out to the parking lot, where, after a delightful midsummer meal like that, they took to, as is their wont, smoking with the sinners. Them with all them strawberries on their breath and whatnot. And The sinners knew what was up. And they stood there, chain-smoking, insouciantly, until Sister Carol Baker showed up at the door with the vestibule door with the cathedral solar-powered cattle prod. And even then, because you let deacons have 2 weeks off, and they're just, well, they get not so much surly as layabout. And they never did really get moving. They just sort of ambled through the door. I think Sister Carol touched one of them with the cattle prod. She wasn't any too thrilled with their uppityness, those deacons. And they wandered on down front, and they, not even standing around, they've taken their seats in the front row. And I swear I can hear from even from up here at the pulpit, I think I can hear a couple of them already snoring. Deacons. So there's no heavy brass-bound velvet line plates to be passed. No one need worry about getting a closed head injury from being whomped in the head with one of those things while every head's bowed and every eye's closed. We don't really even need an offertory hymn this evening, brethren and sistren. No, we don't. Because there's no offering. Because this has been a blessed week of more than a week of fundraising free radio. And that is a community-made miracle. And for that, thanks, mighty good thanks, is given. And so, with that, then, let us proceed to the lesson. Yes, make no mistake, we will get into the business of the pageants and the news of the day, but we do have to check in on the religion industry, because if you turn your back on them, well, there's no telling what they'll get up to. There are strange things that are on the minds of religious leaders, not just in the new United States of America, but the world over. Take, for instance, Greek Orthodox Bishop Neophytos Masouras. Bishop Neophytos Masouras has found the cause of homosexuality. Yes. I doubt we've got any Greek speakers in the audience, but just in case. Yeah.
Είναι πρόβλημα, λέει, που συνήθως το μεταδίδουν οι γονείς στο παιδί.
Now, Bishop Neophytos Masouris has a beard that would be the envy of any Ayatollah. I think he can probably strain soup out of it if it comes to a pinch. But being an Orthodox bishop, he spends an inordinate amount of time thinking about the gay. And so it was, in translation, he declared, "Homosexuality is usually a problem transferred to a fetus when a pregnant woman has anal sex and enjoys it. It happens during the parents' intercourse or pregnancy. It follows an abnormal sexual act between the parents. To be more clear, anal sex. Saint Porphyrios says that when the woman likes that, a desire is born, and then the desire is passed on to the child." For anyone even remotely interested, Saint Porphyrios was something they called a hero monk, H-I-E-R-O-M-O-N-K. And that's somebody who's a monk and a priest at the same time. He claimed before his death in 1991 that he was given the spiritual gift of being able to watch spiritual television, as he described it. In other words, meaning that he was clairvoyant and could predict things. Because, of course, in Christianity, people can't just be, you know, gay. There has to be a cause and effect sort of relationship. And I guess because that's the thing that Greek bishops sit around thinking about a lot, that Bishop Neophytos Masouris has decided that, oh, Jesus Christ. Well, yeah, I mean, I guess that's appropriate, too. Mm-hmm. We've got an update. We got a prayer meeting Wednesday update on a case out of New Jersey. Remember, I think it was last week, was it? No? Maybe, yeah. Week before, perhaps. We had the story of Dr. William Weaver of the Linden Presbyterian Church, where he was the minister for around four decades, who got finally busted for his, let us say, non-canonical belief that he could... And I don't know what Bishop Neophytos Masouris would think about this, but his belief that he could remove demons from men, preferably strong, beefcakey, hunky men, by sucking the demons out through the ends of their penises. Well, having been caught, Reverend Dr. Weaver gave up his ordination and his membership in the Presbyterian Church. But the Presbyterian Church said, well, okay, in exchange for that, we won't put you through the problem of a religious trial. And then he moved to a gated retirement community in Lakewood, New Jersey. Oops. Turns out, he's not going to get away entirely scot-free because he's at least going to have to go to a real court as opposed to a church one. Yep. There haven't been any well, there's a civil lawsuit against him that alleges assault, sexual assault, aggravated assault, sexual battery, false imprisonment, intentional infliction of emotional distress, misrepresentation, and gross negligence. The lawsuit was filed by a lawyer from Toms River, New Jersey, named Robert Fugie. Yeah, took up some 105 pages, it did. And one cannot help but wonder how one grossly and negligently sucks out demons through guys' penises. I mean, isn't that sort of like admitting that it can be done right, but he did it wrong? Lawyering. lawyers. False imprisonment. That was probably the tying down part so that, you know, so that the demon possessed would stay still while the demon came rushing out the... You know, this story's not going to get any better. Okay, I just wanted to update you and let you know something had happened. Keep moving. It's been a while since we've heard from... what's the line? The legend lives on from the Chippewa on down of the woman they call batshit crazy. Bachman, it's said, is dumber in the head than a hog is in the ass. With a daisy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm trying. So, an anti-gay author and... Well, of course, he's a radio host because it's old tax-free, hallelujah. Doctor, again with the doctors, Dr. Michael Brown. Oh, wait, that's the wrong one. Nope. Hold on. There she is. Maybe we'll get back to Dr. Michael Brown. No, Michelle Batshit Crazy Bachman has been gone for a little while, but she showed up on a different, and it's all tax-free, radio program by the name of Stand in the Gap. Well, maybe not with the good Presbyterian minister around. I mean, not unless you got, like, some of those splatter-proof goggles on. I think you missed a demon there, Doc. Well, anyway, Michelle, since getting bounced from the Congress, has declared herself to be the pastor to the United Nations, 1L Michelle Bachman. And so she winds up on this goofy tax-free radio program to tell people what a fine, upstanding Christian nitwit Nero is. He's every bit as good a Christian as the original Nero. That is to say, not one at all. Just don't tell 1L Michelle. Ooh, that could be a song. Just don't tell 1L Michelle. Or on you, she'll call down hell. Clarity would be much better at this than I.
So much of what is happening globally with this acknowledgement of Israel, support for Israel, is tied directly to our current president. Unlike anyone before him, he has shown this kind of support you're talking about and encouraged this kind of prayer for the nation of Israel. I'd love for you to comment on that because I know you have a little bit of an inside track with respect to that and to him.
Yes, I serve on the President's Faith Advisory Initiative. I'm extremely grateful to be able to do that. I want your listeners to know, never before have I ever seen a more pro-Israel president. He does things in his life. He says things with his mouth that are dishonoring. But I will say, He is, without a doubt, the most biblical president I have ever seen. I'm going to repeat that. He is the most biblical president I have ever seen.
I'm so glad she repeated that, because I've spent a while pondering and praying over, brethren and sistren, what it means to be the most biblical president she's ever seen. Naturally, the Kenyan Muslim usurper couldn't possibly have been a biblical president. She was busy. She spent 8 years praying for him to be struck dead by a lightning bolt from Zeus. I mean, Almighty God. Thor, Ragnarok, what the... Huitzilopochtli, who knows? Biblical... And you know, there are some really bad biblical kings in the Old Testament. New Testament, too. And you know what? He may... You know, there's a difference between godly and biblical. For instance, he could be said to bear a shocking resemblance to Herod there in the New Testament with the slaughter of the innocents. Herod, who was trying to kill baby Jesus, so we're told, and so ordered the slaughter of all the little boys who had been born in his realm in the relevant time frame. Now, mind you, there's not a shred of evidence that ever happened, but work with me here. Or then there's, there's David, who sent his rival off to get killed in a war so that he could bang his rival's wife, even though David already had more wives than he could handle. And so God responded by murdering David's baby son, and apparently it was the one he liked, not Solomon. I guess there's that. But, you know, the Herod business, well, that precipitated what is known as the flight into Egypt. And, of course, there were no airplanes then, or even the dinosaurs large enough to, but maybe, I mean... Christians, you can never tell. Oh, by the way, going back to the Presbyterian minister sucking out the demons, I got a Bob out of Silent R. Lamar, who will have to deal with the Ron and Raleigh's law firm over that. Silent R. Lamar said, Bob, you ever heard of a demon seed? First cowbell of the evening for Silent, it goes to Silent R. Lamar. Yeah. I mean, hey. Yeah, Ron and Raleigh, by the way, asking, Bob, was that the Greek member of the Kincaid clan, Stelio Kincaidolopoulos? Haven't heard from him. It's nice to hear from that part of the family. Well, Stelio Kincaidolopoulos has been accused of not sounding particularly Greek. Brother Deacon Asa says he sounds a lot more Russian. I was going for bad Italian, so there's no accounting for that branch. That's why we don't hear from them very often. Yeah. But the flight into Egypt. I mention this only because Tommy Lauren, otherwise known as Arian Barbie, Nuremberg Barbie, Vance Barbie, it took to the Twitter to declare that anyone who drags their child 2,000 miles to the American border deserves what they get, and they're terrible parents. Now, remember, Tommy Lauren considers herself to be quite the Christian. So I guess Mary and Joseph were terrible parents for fleeing the gangs and the thugs of their day to go to Egypt and hang out for a while till the coast was clear. You know, sort of like Guatemalan and Salvadoran and Honduran parents flee the gangs in Central America to come up here and, well, if not have a better life, have a life at all. Of course, for several little children, that has not worked out so well, what with them being all dead at the hands of the ICE and the Border Patrol. that's your biblical president. But back to, you don't want to sell 1L Michelle batshit crazy Bachman short.
And what he does, his actions are remarkable. And I would ask the audience to please pray for him continually. We've never seen a president under more attack, more undeserved attack. But I think it's because, again, of the day that we live in, the deception that we live in, and the demonic presence of so many evil things in our society. He deserves our prayers. He needs our prayers. And again, God will answer those prayers. He answered those prayers before for us, and we need to not...
Well, wait. He answered the prayer. Wait. Isn't Barack Obama still alive? 8 years she spent praying for God to murder Barack Obama. Never even got a single visit, not one, from those humorless dudes in the black suits with the skinny black ties who talk to their wrists. Not one.
Not just sit back because he's done godly things. We need to be very active and lift up his arms. Aaron and Miriam lifted up Moses' arms. This is the fellow that God has made our president. He's not only...
Lift up his arms? I think she's got Trump confused with John McCain.
Only leading us in the United States to the greatest level of prosperity, the greatest level of blessing toward Israel. He's put us in a path of blessing like no other president ever has. But because of the times we live in, we need him more than ever to listen to godly counsel, which he has.
Because God tells him to put babies in cages. And God tells him to have his USDA take food out of the mouths of hungry children whose only decent meals often come at school. Yeah, sure. And that's nutty enough. But, well, that's just the tip of the tip of the iceberg, as it were. Because they're, here we go. Chris McDonald. So there's have you seen the trailer for the new, Won't You Be My Neighbor? Isn't that the name of the movie? Tom Hanks playing Mr. Rogers, and Tom Hanks is of course foreordained to get an Oscar for it, because anytime a white guy puts on makeup that makes him look like somebody else, you have to immediately give him an Oscar for it. Chris McDonald and firefighter prophet Mark Taylor, who can't even predict the coming of night from the previous day. They're working Kevin Swanson's corner, getting mad at movies. In fact, I should probably have getting mad at the movies. And where Kevin Swanson gets mad at cartoon girls, picking up on Jerry Falwell's religious fury against a purple puppet with a triangle on its head carrying a purse. I think my modifiers are a little mixed up there. Well, we'll have to live with it. They're mad at Mr. Rogers.
I saw today that Tom Hanks, who is named in many, many pedophile-related tweets, pedophile-related call-outs, like Isaac Cappy before he got whacked.
Notice he's named in tweets and call-outs, which is different from being named in actual documentation, like, say, Jeffrey Epstein, who, by the way, the news has revealed, discussed his plans to, and I'm not kidding, discussed his plans to save the human race via transhumanism by, I mean, he was talking to scientists and stuff about it. He wanted to have 20 women a week brought out to his, or no, 20 women brought out to his New Mexico ranch, where he would inseminate them. And at any given time, there would be 20 pregnant women carrying on Jeffrey Epstein's genetic legacy. 20 give birth, 20 more come in. Or maybe it's just staggered. I don't quite know. Ooh! And he also explained in these conversations that when he dies, he wants to have both his head. Well, he wants to have both the big head and the little head cryogenically frozen. But these guys, well, they're not mad at Donald Trump's former bosom buddy. Ew. They're mad at Tom Hanks.
Called Hanks out. He called Spielberg out. He called a lot of names out. And of all things, Mark, I mean, this is insanity to me. They cast him as none other than Mr. Rogers. That's the new thing. He's coming out and playing. He's going to be the role of Mr. Rogers in this new movie that's coming out. And I don't think that's by mistake. I think that's code. It's signaling. It's a pedophile signal. I mean, because look, Mr. Rogers was without a doubt. I've never heard anything negative about Fred Rogers. I don't know his past. I don't know what he was about. Whether he was into this stuff or not. I mean, look, the man was.
What? All kidding aside, this is a sign, this is proof of just how disgusting and wicked, evil and nasty these members of the evangelical cult are. They perpetually defend a man who has been accused of rape by more than 20 women, credibly accused of rape. On the other hand, I don't know if Fred Rogers was a pedophile. I don't even... This would be a good time to note that in terms of libel and slander, defamatory dignity torts, the standard is actual malice. And that's a jury question. And even if you're a public figure, if you can prove actual malice, you can have people like Chris McDonald and firefighter prophet Mark Taylor for lunch via a jury. And I can't help thinking that should happen. Because this is just filthy.
I'm just being brutally honest. I mean, he wasn't the most masculine guy out there. I mean, he dealt with children, and that's fine. That was his nature. And I'm not saying that as a slap or whatever.
He was a damn sight more masculine than Christopher McDonald or firefighter prophet Mark Taylor, because masculinity is not defined by the depth of a voice or the circumference of a bicep. True masculinity is defined by decency. And by that standard, Fred Rogers was a he-man among men, a titan, a monument to masculinity, because his masculinity wasn't toxic. And I don't know what you'd use to describe firefighter prophet Mark Taylor and Christopher McDonald. They sound kind of, forgive the use of the word, pissy and bitchy to me.
But it makes you wonder, with everything we know and what you just mentioned, with the pedophiles beginning to close ranks, because look, they got to do something. They got to turn something to generate their trafficking up. And I just think this thing with Tom Hanks, again, you put a mainstream actor in this role, And again, it's almost like it's blatantly in our face and saying, guess what? We're gonna recruit for more of the pedophilia.
Here's a question. You've heard this guy on a number of occasions on this program. Would you trust Christopher McDonald within the same zip code as any child you care about? Would you trust firefighter prophet Mark Taylor in the same area code as any little kid? Because I wouldn't. Wowzer. Yeah, that's what he said, James in Illinois knowing it. We don't know that he wasn't a pedophile. Somewhere, Aristotle's ashes just reconstituted long enough for him to kill himself. James also adding, please, God, quit blessing us with so much Israel. Ron in Raleigh asks, do you think the Marmalade Mugabe laughs his ass off when he hears all this bullshit praise? He knows he's the most irreligious bastard to ever live. I can hardly stand to listen to this bullshit. This ain't my first time listening. I listen to all this stuff before it ever makes it to the program. So, you know, get off the cross, Ron. We need the wood. Meanwhile, going back to the good Greek Orthodox bishop, Kyle says, wait, so it's the woman's fault I'm gay? For the longest time, they told me it's because I just chose not to be attracted to them, and now they're telling me the damn woman did something wrong before I was born to make it that way? I can't keep up. Could they at least stick to blaming one person for me being the way I am so then I know who to sick the flying spaghetti monster on? My God, these people. They can't keep up. They can't even keep up with their own conspiracies. Well, I suggest you just sick the flying spaghetti monster on Bishop Eggplant Moussaka over there. Steve in New York says, no, it makes you wonder because you're two of the sickest motherfuckers breathing on this green rock. Bob, I have no words strong enough to yell at or describe these two filthy men. And they are, they are. No doubt about it. So that was a few days ago. Couple of days ago, and apparently it worked for them, so they doubled down.
One thing that happened was with the Disney Cruise Lines, and we all know that Disney is one of the most sick organizations in this country. They target children. They have become really a haven. Their hierarchy, the executives for transgenderism, homosexuality, lesbianism, I mean, they and pedophilia, and they have sunk to a level that people that put any money in Disney World should be ashamed of themselves, because look, folks, this is not a family organization.
You know what's interesting is there are real issues relating to Disney, particularly in the theme parks, that you'll never hear firefighter prophet Mark Taylor or McFiles host Christopher McDumbass, mention. The granddaughter, I think it's the granddaughter, of Walt Disney, maybe it's the daughter of Walt Disney, penned an open letter not too long back to, I think, Bob Iger, who is the CEO of Disney. And she detailed in it the miserable lives of the people who play the characters in Disney theme parks. Now, I'm not talking about miserable just because they're wearing those hot suits, costumes. Miserable because they're poorly paid and worse treated. and she suggested that a living wage be paid to all of these people, and that it, and that people like Bob Iger, if it came out of their salaries, would never even feel it. In case anybody else wants to pogo stick up, Ron and Raleigh has let me know. Okay, Bob, I'm climbing down off the cross now. Well, these sick bastards, look, they rake it in hand over fist on these programs. And they're all set up, as I said, as tax-free dodges. And so they feel comfortable just slandering away. And then it turns into libel when it's no longer live and it's put up on YouTube.
And Walt Disney was not a family man. There's things coming out about Walt Disney right now that would make your hair curl if you do your research.
He was a 33rd degree Mason.
33rd degree Mason.
And it's no coincidence that Disneyland is built on a 33rd degree latitude or something like that out there.
Whoo! Yeah, third degree Mason. These stupid bastards don't even know anything about the Masonic Lodge. Jesus.
Research it. Search it out.
And it's also not by mistake that when the movie came out, Saving Mr. Banks came out, which was basically had to do with Walt Disney, that none other than Tom Hanks was the one that played Walt Disney. And Tom Hanks has his own little issue right now with questions of pedophilia and trafficking surrounding him.
No, he doesn't. Because the only people who are saying that are these Lulus.
Now, Disney had a cruise line ship here recently that you found out that went, of all places.
And by the way, this is called the Monday Night Spiritual Smackdown.
You're Epstein Island. And talk to us a little bit about that. I found that very intriguing.
Well, Q dropped that.
Q confirmed that.
Now, you can't take a cruise ship to Little St. James because it's too small, but that St. Thomas over there, I think, has got ports, and they were moving, you know, boat.
Yes, St. Thomas in the United States Virgin Islands has a port. It's called Charlotte Amalie. God damn, it's not a secret. I've been there. You've been there. Agnes has been there. Our children have been there. And you know what? There was an entire cruise ship of gay people that was tied up right next to us. Because it's a cruise ship port. I mean, it just is. It was in Charlotte Amalie that I thought, I don't want to schlep it around with me. I'll pick it up on the way back, but we didn't take the same way back. I wanted that T-shirt so badly. It had a skull and crossbones and U.S. Virgin Islands on the front. And on the back, it had the motto, "The beatings will continue until morale improves." Of course, that's probably, don't tell Christopher McDonald or firefighter prophet Mark Taylor about that.
Whatever it was over to that island. But here's the thing with Disney Cruise Line. Look, I want to put this caution out for people. Disney World, Walt Disney built over here in Central Florida in Orlando, all right? Now, I've been to Disney even as a kid. I went to Disney. Everybody thinks it's always so innocent, this, that, and the other.
Well, that certainly explains things now, doesn't it?
Well, now that we're finding out, guys, for years, Disney's not innocent. There's a reason why you don't want your kids watching any Disney programming, because that's why it's called programming, okay?
Oh, God, he is a sharp one. Man, he's as sharp as the business end of a mortar and pestle.
Grams. Because they're programming your kids. It may look so innocent. Trust me, it's not. There's frequencies in there. There's pedophilia stuff in there. There's, there's just nasty. Look, don't go to Disney, guys. Don't.
Okay, this part's serious. You'll notice that they lump LGBTQ, the LGBTQ community in with pedophilia. This is their means of trying to push back against civility and decency in the name of the, ostensibly in the name of the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and semi-literate rabbi who wore a dress every day of his life. You know, Yeshua. Uh-huh. They're trying to plant and they're trying to perpetuate in the minds of the Atne Ute Aitbre, if you one what I Inme, people who sit and watch this, you know, Emery and Marveline sitting there in their matching barca loungers in the double wide, that there is a connection between the two when there is not. That's the insidious part of this tax-free hustle.
Take your kids to Disney. If you're a godly man or woman, nobody should be walking on that property with their family and trying to enjoy the summer for the day, okay? It's just because, I mean, there's just too much going on over there.
Yeah, shut up. So we've heard from those freaks on that on that front. And I know I had to. Oh, there it is. Yes. I knew I had it. Now, you've just heard them fulminating for minutes on end about pedophilia in the United States. And everybody and their cousin to them, except them, is a pedophile. This, of course, makes me worry about them more than I do other people. Steve in New York says, these two guys are each going to end up in another man's mouth, if not each other's. Yeah, it's almost the goddess of irony would not tolerate anything less. That'd be really great, says Flavio. I hope Hank sues the pants off these freaks. He'll never even hear about him. Jack in Shreveport says, help, I'm stuck. Sigh. You got my brain all stuck and stuff on that story you led off with. Could you please alleviate my distress and just reassure me that every single freaking demon being extracted isn't trying to hold on to their own horns and pitchfork? Or maybe that priest slash whatever had a special prayer of lubrication? Yeah, you know, it's pretty delicate tissue down there. It could get rent and torn, I reckon. Well, now I'm hurting, Jack. Damn it. Bob Iger, by the way, Ron and Raleigh reminds us, made $65.6 million in 2018, an 81% increase over 2017. Nice work if you can get it. And I still wonder what it is he does to be worth that kind of scratch. But you know what you're never going to hear? The firefighter prophet Mark Taylor and Chris McDonald talk about? You're never going to hear him talk about 66-year-old Charles Andrews. 66-year-old Charles Andrews is a preacher down in Florida. Now, back 13 years ago, he got busted as a sex offender after having been charged with sexual abuse. And back in 2006, well, I guess he got some sort of a deal where he walked. But he also... maybe he took it to the Lord in prayer and decided not to register as a sex offender because Jesus done told him he'd forgived him. Well, flash forward to the 29th day of July, 2019, and good God-fearing, upstanding man of God, minister of the gospel, Charles Andrews, age 66, who was 53 when he got busted for sexual abuse, here's a hint, the first time. Well, he's now been charged with 500 counts of possession of, wait for it, child pornography. Yes. So while, you know, I don't just do things here. There's a setup. There's a method to the madness. There's a process. So while Chris McDonald and firefighter prophet Mark Taylor have kittens with crocheted tails about the people that they disagree with politically and philosophically and religiously, and therefore declare the people they disagree with to, they must naturally be pedophiles. The real pedophiles are people that they agree with philosophically, politically, and religiously. Now, I suppose it's entirely possible that brother pastor minister Charles Andrews thought he was engaging in some self-help. He wasn't actually going out and sexually abusing people anymore. He was just sitting around whacking off to kiddie porn. And he maybe told himself, well, I ain't hurting nobody. It's just pictures and videos. Never thinking for a moment about the fact that somebody has to take the pictures and someone has to be in the videos. 500 counts. And, of course, he had it all on his personal computer. Suffer the little children to come unto me. That's what it says in the book, isn't it? Yeah. 500 counts. His bond is set at north of $5 million for once. Bond being reasonable. Sounds like maybe the authorities down in Florida aren't so sanguine about the possibility of him not reoffending. Might have another computer somewhere with 500 more clips and whatnot of children being compelled to have sex. Pedophilia. And curiously, for all that he knows, or it knows, or she knows, or they know, Q has never given a word about this to firefighter prophet Mark Taylor and Chris McDonald, who was sitting there honking on a bottle of Gatorade. Nope, not a peep. Kind of makes you feel like maybe Q is either a clueless idiot, or, and I think we have to just at least admit the possibility, entirely imaginary. I mean, yeah. Christian man of God, Charles Andrews, age 66, busted on 500 counts of child pornography. And then we come to another update, another prayer meeting Wednesday case update. Craig Northcott. Remember we talked about him from Coffee County, Tennistan? This is the guy who said, under no uncertain terms, will he ever pursue domestic violence charges in a case involving a gay couple? Because gay, because God, because God talks to Craig Northcott, and Northcott is a bigot and a homophobe who somehow doesn't think that the Constitution and laws of the United States and the state of Tennessee apply to gay people. Well, with perfect timing, part of the reason that I asked Ron to kindly get off the cross is because, Craig Northcott needs it. Because he's pogo-sticking right up onto it lickety-split. Now, recall that Craig Northcott is the county prosecutor, the district attorney for Coffee County, Tennessee. And he is now attacking a defendant in a case that where he's prosecutor, and he says that people are trying to impose on me a religious and political test for serving in my office, for conducting my job. The don't like people don't like my theological and political beliefs. At the center of the case is a young student activist named Justin Jones. During a protest, Justin Jones was alleged to have thrown a cup of iced tea into an elevator that was full of religious bigot Tennessee lawmakers. Another lawyer by the name of Nick Leonardo represents Justin Jones and said this case is every bit about race and equality and marginalized populations. And with those sorts of views, Judge, it's impossible for Mr. Jones to get a fair trial with Mr. Northcott prosecuting. The judge, meanwhile, said she didn't have the authority to tell Northcott to get out of the case. That's a damned interesting legal system there in Tennessee, where a trial judge would not have the authority to tell a prosecutor that he was conflicted out. So now, because evangelical fundamentalist homosexuals have a deep-seated persecution complex, he says he's being tormented. Now, nobody made Craig Northcott stand up and say that God don't recognize marriages of same-sex couples, and so they don't get to be protected by domestic violence. Along the way, he wanted to make sure he had all of his bases covered, so he also announced that there are no religious rights for Muslims because they don't worship the one true God of the Constitution. Now, Northcott is trying to extricate himself from the situation, but young Mr. Jones doesn't appear to want to play ball.
That is called upholding the Constitution Day, Northcott. We're going to tell us that we deserve equal protection under the law, all people. And if your theology is white supremacy, then that is your problem. But we are calling out racism. That's what we're calling out. Right? And so we need people to stand up and say, this is not right. That they can prosecute me, but what's really on trial is the state of Tennessee. Because the state of Tennessee continues to allow these men, these white men in power, to treat us like we're nothing.
That's right.
And yet look around and look at the diversity of this space. We had people from all around, people came all the way from East Tennessee, woke up this morning and drove all the way from Monroe County and McMinnville and people from Nashville. People even came from North Carolina because we know that what's on trial today is bigger than one person. And so I thank you for coming to support me and know that we'll continue to push. We'll continue to hold the North Coast of the world accountable because we are no longer afraid of them. And that's what they want. No, I will be honest with you, and I don't know where Nick is, but they did not want me to come before this court today. They want me to accept the deal of not going to the Capitol, and I refuse to take that deal because that is the people's house. That is the people's house.
Now, bear in mind, what he's alluding to is the plea deal that was offered to him was, well, we'll drop the charges if you just promise never to go to the Capitol of the great state of Tennessee, not never no more again. In other words, don't be a citizen. Don't be an activist. Do not use your First Amendment rights to petition the government for redress of grievances. And if you promise not to, and you don't show the world what a filthy fucking bigot I am, well, then we won't put you in jail, boy.
You can't keep the people out the people's house. Who has the power?
We have the power.
What type of power?
People power.
Who has the power?
We have the power.
What type of power?
People power.
Who's court?
Our court.
Who's court?
Our court.
Who's court?
Our court.
Who's court?
Our court.
All right.
I have a feeling young Mr. Jones might be someone to keep an eye on. because he's a brave young man and quite the patriot. On the other hand, I imagine that being a good Christian, D.A. Northcott goes to sleep, before he goes to sleep every night, is praying for Jesus to do something to that young man. And maybe Craig Northcott, Republican that he is, has some friends that might be willing to, you know, help Jesus. Sickening, isn't it? Why that man has a law license is entirely beyond me. Ron in Raleigh says, wait, what? Why aren't these jagoffs talking about the credible rumors about Orange Julius and his pedophilia? Island jaunts with Jeffrey Epstein are on the Lolita Express. Well, for the same reason they don't talk about the guy with the 500 counts of child pornography, because they are in philosophical, spiritual, political, and religious agreement with him. Jim doesn't understand, says, why the Appalachian firefighter? Because he bills himself as the firefighter prophet. He claims to have predicted something on or around sometime, kind of, sort of, maybe, in conjunction with the attacks of September 11th, 2001, and he's been riding that ever since. He shows up on Jim Baker's little hustle out in Branson, Missouri, he's on the firefighter prophet, Mark Taylor. Silent R. Lamar says, I have a question. How would fire pisser prophet feel if Disney were to sue for damages after his comments? They won't, because these two turds are more or less judgment proof. And when you're something like Disney and you're going to use your considerable resources at law, well, you don't fritter it away on somebody that you can never get a nickel out of. Meanwhile, a note coming in from our buddy Suman out in Arizona, Stan. Why do you reckon all these idiots are so fixated on accusing people of being child molesters? I believe it's projection. I'm curious to know what the Horn community thinks. Yep. You guys are way ahead of me here. Not really. It has something to do with the latency of the internet, Suman. But it's kind of inescapable. Anybody who hoots and howls about something that much might very well have something to hide. Recall the title of the Beatles track from the White Album. It was from the White Album, wasn't it? Everyone's got something to hide besides me and my monkey. Or everyone's got something to hide except me and my monkey. All right, here's our... We'll do the here end of the lesson part with this. Once in a while, you get a story that's almost a little bit hopeful. I mean, okay, it's hopeful that that pedophilic pedophile preacher may never see the outside of a jail again. That's hopeful. But this too. A guy named Josh Harris. Josh Harris is one of those guys who wrote books that flew off the shelves in Christian bookstores. He wrote relationship guides. As far as 1997, it was 1997 when he rose to a certain sort of fame in those circles with a book called I Kissed Dating Goodbye. the purpose of the book was to declare that, that abstinence, you know, not having sex, was God's plan for people who had, you know, not been married up. And he rode that horse for a long time. And probably made no small amount of money. On advice like, couples shouldn't even kiss or hold hands until they were married. Well, the hopeful part of this is that a few days back, he announced that his good, God-fearing, upstanding Bible believing, Christ-centered, family values, Christian marriage was over. The story came from The Guardian. And he said, by the way, I Kissed Dating Goodbye sold almost 1 million copies. He was a mega church preacher. He was 21 years old when he wrote it. And he was one of the driving forces behind what came to be referred to as purity culture that resulted in all those really, really creepy pictures of little teen and preteen girls done up in virginal ball gowns going to purity balls and dancing with their daddies. Up until 2015, he was the senior pastor at Covenant Life Church in Gaithersburg, Maryland, and raked it in hand over fist. The only problem was, and because this is always there, the Covenant Life Church in Gaithersburg was charged with covering up any number of instances of child sexual abuse and not reporting it to police. Okay, wait a minute. Cowbell for Randy and PA. Not all incels, Bob. About a year ago, he said, I no longer agree with the central idea that dating should be avoided that I espoused in my book. I now think dating can be a healthy part of a person developing relationally and learning the qualities that matter most in a partner. To those who read my book and were misdirected or unhelpfully influenced by it, I'm sincerely sorry, but not sorry enough to give the money back. No, I added that last part about not giving the money back. And so, this month, over on Instagram, of course, he announced that he and his wife were splitting up because, quote, significant changes have taken place in both of us. And I've undergone a massive shift in regard to my faith in Jesus. The popular phrase for this is deconstruction. The biblical phrase is falling away. By all the measurements that I have for defining a Christian, I am not a Christian. Many people tell me that there is a different way to practice faith, and I want to remain open to this, but I'm not there now. I've lived in repentance for the past several years, repenting of my self-righteousness, my fear-based approach to life, the teaching of my books, my views of women in the church, and my approach to parenting, to name a few. But I specifically want to add to this list now, and this is the hopeful part. This doesn't happen just every damn day. I specifically want to add to this list now the LGBTQ+ community. I want to say that I'm sorry for the views that I taught in my books and as a pastor regarding sexuality. I regret standing against marriage equality for not affirming you and your place in the church, and for any ways that my writing and speaking contributed to a culture of exclusion and bigotry, I hope you can forgive me. And he added that publication of his book would be discontinued. If you buy into the voodoo and claptrap of Christianity, well, repentance is on the front end of any search for forgiveness and expiation of sin. And probably within that, and you know, the evangelicals don't understand this at all. The greatest sin, you know, the Pharisees came and asked Jesus what was the greatest commandment, and he said, love the Lord your God with all your heart, and the next greatest commandment is to love thy neighbor as thyself. As noted, evangelicals, well, they're whited sepulchres. They're spiritually dead. They're hell-bound, if you believe in something like hell. The cynical among us might suggest that the good pastor, based on what he's saying about the rotten, about regretting and repenting for the rotten things that he said about the gay community, the LGBTQ plus community, because it's not all gay folks. The cynical among us might say he got caught with a man in his mouth. And the cynical among us might not be wrong, but that's purely speculative. It could well be, it could possibly be, that maybe, just maybe, and in the world we're in, I'm kind of rooting for this maybe over the other maybe, that maybe people can change. Maybe people can stop being merchants of hate. Maybe they can stop making up for their own inadequacies by lashing out at marginalized communities. Maybe. Maybe. I think back to Bishop Carlton Pearson. Way back in the early days of this program. Who was well on the way, well, he wasn't on the way, he was already there. He had a huge congregation, a beautiful wife, everything he could want, disciple of Oral Roberts. And he walked into the pulpit one day and said, y'all, there is no such thing as hell. And nobody's going. And in the process, he lost everything. And then proceeded to expand upon his message, built his congregation back up. And when I interviewed him, sounded like someone who really did have, I don't know how you care to define it, but really did have a legitimate spirituality. Maybe this guy, too. Maybe Joshua Harris. Has found a better way to be a human being. Tall order. I know. Tall order. Yeah, going back to the Firefighter Prophet, James in Illinois, says, could you spell that, the prophet part? Yeah, I think it's P-R-O-F-I-T. James, I guarantee you it's P-R-O-F-I-T. Jim asks, where do these people lurk during the day? Talking about the Firefighter Prophet, Mark Taylor, and Chris McDonald. Well, you know, it's just one of those creepy realities. They walk among us, and you might never know. Because they, you know, they cater to a specific little coven of hate. But if they're at McDonald's, they just walk up to the counter and say, "I'd like Big Mac." Right. Randy in PA says, "For me, 30 years ago, my hating situation was essentially a forced situation due to extreme stress over long periods of time. If you reduce the stress in American society, you go up a long distance towards reducing the hate. But in many instances, especially the religious, Randy, the stress is deliberate and induced, because that is the means by which control is maintained." Okay. So, as noted, here endeth the lesson. And really, honestly, isn't it enough? Shortly before the program, I had another fantastic missive from Lady B. This is information rich. And it needs sharing. The title, Sex, Drugs, and On the Dole. Lady B says, "I feel like I'm writing a term paper, but that's okay. It feels good. I'll attribute all quotes, list their sources, and paraphrase as much as I can. Thank you for the outlet, Bob. Thank you for providing me a safe forum." Anytime, Lady B, anytime. You make the program a better thing. 72% of all rural hospital closures are in states that rejected the Medicaid expansion. And given the amount of time dedicated to the question of whether or not every American should be able to go to the doctor when they're sick, this is me editorializing, last night during the pageant, that means something. Because I forget which one of those plant, those moderate house plants, whether it was Tim Ryan or John Delaney or John Hickenlooper. Oops, I just said a bad thing about Democratic candidates. I'm sorry, and I repent, and I seek forgiveness. Thank you. See how it works? It's easy. But they declared that Medicare for All would cause hospitals to close. As Lady B points out, the exact opposite is the fact of the matter. 72% of all rural hospital closures are in states that rejected the Medicaid expansion. Since 2010, 106 rural hospitals have closed across the country. Another 700 are on shaky ground, and about 200 are on the verge of collapse. Of the 106 that closed, 77 were in deep red states where local politicians refused the Obama administration's Medicaid expansion. I will add editorially that refused the Medicaid expansion after John Roberts, the single most brilliantly evil Republican in the United States, told them they could. Picking back up with what Lady B said, Bob, 20% of Americans live in rural areas, including 13 million children. 13 million children whose parents had the option of expanding access to medical care but chose not to because a rich white politician told them it would be akin to voting for socialism. The irony is, most probably don't even know what socialism is. Now, tie the lack of hospital access in with the opioid epidemic. This is from the Children's Defense Fund webpage. among women who struggle with opioid abuse, 86% of pregnancies are unintended, compared with 56% of all pregnancies. They're doing drugs and having babies because instead of providing birth control, we just tell them to stop fucking. And that, of course, is why there are more kids born with physical and mental disorders. In addition to prenatal drug exposure, parents distracted by drugs and without help may be unable to provide children necessary care to grow and thrive. Children and teens are also susceptible to accidental opioid exposure and misuse. Whether children are born suffering from drug exposure, their parents' addiction struggle leads to toxic stress or involvement with the child welfare system, or they use or are accidentally exposed to drugs themselves, opioid addiction has a devastating impact. That's a quote. Lady B says, and if mommy and daddy do it, why can't I? The teen death rate from drug overdoses, this is another quote, that had been declining since 2007, reversed in 2015 when nationwide 772 teens 15 to 19 years old died. Again, says Lady B, they voted against the expansion of Medicaid. But what would lead a person to abuse drugs? As a black woman who grew up in the 70s and 80s, I should be nonplussed, you don't know, but I'll tell you anyway. It's the same fucking thing that haunted the inner cities 40 and 50 years ago. Unemployment. Not having a job to feed and support your family makes you sick. Literally. According to a research paper published by the American Health Association, quote, unemployed men made significantly more visits to their physicians, took more medications, and spent more days in bed sick than did employed individuals, even though the number of diagnoses in the two groups were similar. Drawing a conclusion, Lady B says, dude, it's fucking existential. Quote, for most individuals, basic life requirements are met through employment. But it's much more than that. It also satisfies creative surges and boosts self-esteem. It provides an avenue of self-achievement and self-realization. Now we're going to go deep. In the 12th century, during a Viking invasion of a Scottish monastery, St. Ebba, the Mother Superior, instructed the nuns to disfigure themselves to protect their virginity. The Viking raiders were so disgusted with the nuns' appearance, they burned down the entire monastery with the nuns in it. It's now more commonly referred to as cutting off your nose to spite your face. There's an LBJ quote that, paraphrased, says if you give a southern white man someone to look down upon, he'll let you not only pick his pocket, he'll open it up for you. If you let people treat you like you're nothing, after a while, you start to fulfill their expectations. Like I said, Lady B can dive deep. We are victims, she says, of our own hubris. More deep diving when you start talking about that ancient Greek concept of hubris that makes ever so much sense even down unto the present day. One more rant before I go, she says, and it's relevant. We have to insure 2,000 pounds of steel and fiberglass, yet we're under no obligation to insure or even have the right to demand basic free coverage of our own flesh and blood. Not everybody drives or even owns a car, but everyone will die. Our kids are an extension of both our bloodline and our egos. We should want to give them the world, yet our excessive pride, hubris, is hamstringing our literal future. Tonight, after work, I'm going to drink some wine, smoke a clip, and hopefully pass out. This shit is just too surreal to even deal with anymore. Lady B. And as promised, links, citations, and wow. Jim says, kudos again for Lady B. She's a national treasure. Style and substance well combined. Signed, Jim and Patches. And all of that, lest anyone be mistaken, all of that is tied together. Now, for instance, West Virginia. You might assume that we don't have the Medicaid expansion here, but we do. Because we got it before this state went crazier than a sprayed roach and elected a Republican legislature for the first time in 83 years. Had that legislature been sitting at the time West Virginia became eligible for the Medicaid expansion, we would not have it, but we do. Even though we've got a Republican legislature and a Republican governor, well, most of the hospitals, particularly the rural ones in this state, would be closed. But Medicaid is keeping them alive. Little clinics keep going. Little rural, small-town clinics keep going because of the rural health care initiative in the ACA that was championed by Bernie. I know there's people out there in the Horn Family Community Congregation that hate Bernie. There are also people in the Horn Family Community Congregation who despise Hillary. And maybe it's even a few remaining members of the Sparkle Fart Powered Unicorn Cavalry Purity Brigade. And they hate everybody. But facts are facts. And West Virginia has the Medicaid expansion. I can't get on it. Once a year, and it'll come up at the beginning of December or so, open enrollment comes around for the Affordable Care Act and the marketplaces, and I'll go through the motions again, and I'll apply for that. And I'll get a letter back telling me that I'm too rich. They're not rich enough, I'm sorry. I'm not rich enough for the Affordable Care Act subsidies in the marketplace, but at the same time, I'm too rich for expanded Medicaid. I am in a sort of limbo nowhere land relative to health care, so if I want blood work done, I go and cough up $100 for cheap blood work Wednesday on the first Wednesday of the month at the clinic. When I have to have my prescriptions re-upped, I pay $125 for a 5-minute doctor visit so I can have my prescriptions rewritten. In the meantime, I hope I don't need any other prescriptions and that I don't need any blood work. When your hyperlipidemia, hypertriglyceridemia, like me, you need blood work, but, you know, you just kind of pretend that you don't and keep moving. Try to exercise. Keep yourself in a good frame of mind. Because you don't want to wind up in those situations that are described in Lady B's essay. So while last night during the pageant, I heard John Delaney, good God, who got slapped so hard by Elizabeth Warren, his mother felt it. Sitting there talking, we can't do this, we can't do that, we can't do this. God, it was a beautiful thing when Elizabeth Warren said, for the life of me, I can't figure out why anybody would expend the time and energy it takes to run for president just to tell us what we can't do. I mean, I mentioned it not too long, but once again, that was an example of that molecular acid from the first Alien movie, that one drip went through the dining room table, and the next thing you know, there's a hole in the hull because it went all the way through. She burned him all the way to his core. And John Delaney, oh my God. Tim Ryan tried going after Bernie, and Bernie told him, I wrote the damn bill. That didn't work out so well for Tim. John Hickenlooper we can't possibly let every American go to the doctor when they're sick, tack. And, well, he came back holding his own ass, too. And while those things were factual, they pointed to a larger problem. It's something that I alluded to in a tweet. Why is it that across networks, no matter the network, the people who are hosting them and moderating them and asking the questions are so uniformly awful at their jobs? Because while with the MSNBC one last month, you had Show of Hands Night and Romper Room, this time through, CNN decided to go with the age-old, tried-and-true pro-wrestling tactic of, come on, let's you and him fight. I didn't have a stopwatch going or anything, but they spent an inordinate amount of time desperately trying to get one candidate to call out another candidate by name and get a good fracas going on. It was embarrassing. Not to me, but Jesus. For Jake Tapper and Dana Bash and Don Lemon, embarrassing. And I don't think it was them. I think it was, and this is the paranoia portion of the program, I think that was happening based on directions coming down from on high. Because it really does smell a lot like Joe Biden is the fair, thinning-haired boy of the multimillionaire for-profit media. Because for them, they have to be confirmed in their manifest wisdom. But for all their questioning about the unviability of Medicare for All or some permutation on it, Jake Tapper, Dana Bash, and Don Lemon are never, ever, 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 ever going to face the kinds of questions that Lady B referenced in her essay. If they ever go to rural America, it's because there's a gated community or a gated resort somewhere nearby, and they will never set foot outside of it. I take that back. Sometimes they go to rural America in search of some white lady with economic anxiety. And based on what I was seeing last night on my Twitter feed, the business about you're going to take health care away from a whole bunch of union members that just love their health care. I saw no small number of union members who said, my health care is not great. Give me Medicare for All. And they kept framing it as Medicare for All kills private insurance. Well, I guess there might be a kernel of truth in that. But at best, it's a kernel. For-profit health insurance in which CEOs with more dollars than cents who probably have never worked an honest day in their lives. It will die in a Medicare for All situation, most likely. Because it is economically unviable. That's why we are where we are. Letting capitalism and the profit motive literally suck both life and money out of the American people is not economically sustainable. It fuels its own collapse. With every beach house, every yacht, every 24-karat gold shower curtain bought by a health care insurance executive. Whoever administers a potential Medicare for All program is not going to be living on beans. They will be paid handsomely. But the giant pyramid scheme that undergirds for-profit health insurance won't be there. The commission sales, all of that garbage won't be there. Now, there is a legitimate economic issue here. And it's the same economic issue that faced whalers and buggy whip braiders and faces coal miners. And that is, how do you transition these people out of a dead industry into something that has a future? That has to be addressed. That was certainly not touched last night. It was clear that since Joe Biden was not on that stage, it was going to... The amount... Good God, John Delaney is not polling above 2% and got an inordinate, shocking amount of talk time. As did Hickenlooper in the same situation. As did Tim Ryan in the same situation. When they didn't deserve it. If we're going only by the metric of percentage of support. And Jesus, poor Amy Klobuchar. Well, I'm a fighting girl from the Iron Range, and I don't... Yeah, we just can't do great things in America anymore. We're a pathetic bunch of losers. And shut up or I'll throw something at you. Bullock from Montana. You know, he makes a couple of good points, but it feels terribly conspiratorial to the effect that all of these candidates who don't have a snowball's chance in hell of getting anywhere near the nomination are in there to cast shade, to make sure that the people who do have a chance don't, that the field remains so fractured that they can't get there, that they can't get up within striking distance of Biden. And it smells like a fucking fraud. And I have been highly critical in the past, and I remain highly critical, of simply hollering, goddamn DNC neoliberal establishment shills, every time your hamburger comes up cold at McDonald's. But the DNC establish those benchmarks to make sure that those unviable candidates at least stayed in the early mix, and I suspect so that Joe Biden could get a running head start and get his legs under him. We'll see if he's any better tonight than he was the last time. I was not impressed. James in Illinois, a union man himself. Union Insurance Golden Calf. I get so fucking tired of hearing how no union person wants to give up our great insurance. You want to know why it's great? Everyone pays into it something like $5 an hour, maybe more by now, and it varies by location and I guess by craft. I added the by craft part. But if you don't have the minimum hours, you're just paying in for the people who do. Fuck the profiteers. Medicare's the best thing that ever happened to me. And see, I sit around sometimes and I think about things like, well, okay, I'm 56, 56 and a half. That means I got 8.5 years to Medicare. Hopefully I can make it 8.5 years. Then I'll have insurance. I'll be able to go to the doctor. But the problem is, these are 8.5 precious years. And in the meantime, you got to, well, I guess you're just rolling, spinning the roulette wheel, throwing the dice. You'd think that people would look at the union insurance situation and say, hey, look, everybody's paying into a common pool. I wonder if that would work on a much larger scale. Why, yes, yes, as a matter of fact, it would. And they create this notion that, oh, well, you know, we're going to take away everybody's insurance and leave them uninsured, and then we'll get around to giving. That's not how it's designed. That's not how it works, and that's not what it says. But according to Jake Tapper and Don Lemon and Dana Bash, it is. Those powdered panjandrums of the for-profit media. In regard to universal health care, Todd in South Carolina Stan says, maybe health insurance workers should be repurposed into the new system or at least get first dibs in health care and administration and delivery. It's going to take a lot of people to do that. And so, yeah, maybe they, right. And then the more or less useless upper level CEOs and CFOs and COOs and whatever, you know, maybe we can send them to live on a nice farm upstate where they can run and play all day, all the time in the sunshine. Maybe that would work. Rick wants to tweak Ron and Raleigh. Bob.
Ah.
Stop telling us who won last night's debate and who needs to sit down. Are you a DNC neoliberal shield on the payroll of Chicken Noodle News?
LOL.
Yeah, that's me. You betcha. Did you notice, asks Ron and Raleigh, all the pundits use the same people love their employer-provided health care meme, yet not one of them asked about COBRA payments if you lose your job. I'm guessing their contracts have a clause that their insurance is paid for if they lose their jobs. After all, Megyn Kelly got $3 million when she was sent packing for being a racist. Yeah, she got paid. She got paid to say something stupid, mean, and racist. Also, adds Ron, no one seemed to wonder what will happen to the 6,500 jobs being lost in that auto plant, but by God, you can't set the parasites and the insurance companies adrift. Well, no, I mean, they're important people. Yeah, says Darlene in Connecticut. A hospital in my area had threatened to shutter its birthing center, weighing monetary concerns against need, as young families can't afford to live in the region due to the high real estate costs, gentrification, and the affluent's ignorant, bigoted aversion to affordable housing. It makes sense that this hospital would try to cut its losses, but the community absolutely flipped out. And honestly, it's a pretty sucky hospital. But people want the knowledge or some assurance that a safety net is there even though they're doing everything to ensure that the population is not diverse enough to warrant it. Life in rural America. I wrote that the very moment you began the rant about rural America. I do love the synergy. And it's amazing how that happens. I see it happen night in and night out. I think it, and y'all are thinking it at the same time. Not even any internet latency involved. Steve says, that union member loves their health care crap is just that, crap. Ms. Karen is in a union, and our health care out-of-pocket expenses cost more than our mortgage each month. We would trade it for universal health care, Medicare for all, tomorrow if we could. Bernie did a good job calling out the corporate bosses at CNN, though. He said, and they're probably running for-profit health care ads in this debate. I didn't notice if they were, but Bernie, quit whispering that kind of shit in the universe's ear, because now they will. Hey, Bernie had a good idea. Bernie did fairly well last night. I think Elizabeth Warren probably got top numbers. But goddamn, you wouldn't have known it if you tuned into my filthy morning habit this morning. Jesus Christ. They had Pete Buttigieg on, who had a good moment when he called out every Republican in the country, every Republican politician, and saying, you know, whether you stand with this racist is going to be the thing that defines you. I mean, you can be dead in the grave, and Trump will define you. George Wallace's daughter gave a talk in which she said that Donald Trump is even more hateful, more vicious, and more race-baiting than her daddy, George C. Wallace. How about that? Wow. Damn it. I had to run errands earlier today. Margie had to go for a follow-up to her doctor. And I had to get a new inspection sticker on the car. It died today. And I get so wrapped up in things, I forget to go to the liquor store. So this is going to be another painfully sober viewing of another Democratic pageant. And I had forgotten about Joe Biden not being on the stage last night. So Biden bingo wasn't in the mix, but Biden bingo is definitely in the mix this evening. And I think the first person who, kicking union members off their wonderful health insurance, is that the free square, or is that an actual square on the Biden bingo card? I'm also wondering if he will tell us that he's the one who can take on Trump, because he'll look at him and say, come on, man! Dude! Meh. Meanwhile, I get an alert from CNN. Follow along, Joe Biden is ready to defend his record on a debate stage that shows off the diversity of the Democratic field. Yeah, okay. Color me unimpressed. And they can say that they drew lots or random whatever to get this set up, but you'll never convince me. What are the odds that Kamala Harris and Joe Biden would be rematched under a situation like that? Sorry. Let's run over and check in with our buddy VT Blom. Hey, man.
Sorry, am I coming through?
Yeah, you're good.
Okay. What are the odds that Bernie and Elizabeth ended up on stage together?
Oh, I know.
And
the hope was that they would go after each other, but I think they realized that it was going to be a concerted effort against them. So it was a team
effort.
Yeah, it was tagged. Look, it was professional wrestling.
Well, CNN, that's what they do.
Well, but no, Scott, it's not just CNN. It's CNN and everybody else. It's all WWE now.
Right. That's because Trump. That's what Trump did in the last election. He turned it into stylized wrestling. Who's got the best costumes? Who's got the best cheering squad? And that's who wins. I spent all day today with a septuagenarian. Actually, what's a 90-year-old? Nanogenarian.
Nonagenarian.
Thank you. He turns 90. All he watches is Fox News.
That can't be helpful.
Connection, and the first thing that he wanted was Fox News. And I said, you know, dude, that's a problem. And he said, well, why? I said, because Fox News isn't news. It doesn't tell you anything true. It tells you what they want.
It's state media. It's TASS and Pravda all at once.
And it's like, he says, well, what should I watch? I said, well, you can watch CNN, and CNN is...
Oh, they're communists.
I find them marginal, but they're okay. They try. MSNBC, they try. But not to a Fox News watcher. That damn stuff comes out of Russia, you know.
No, that's RT.
No. MSNBC and CNN, that stuff is, that does not, no, that's not made here in America. I live in Florida.
Oh, I know.
These people are deep.
They're not deep state, they're deep stupid.
No, yeah, it is. Well, it's not, he's actually not a stupid person. He's actually really entertaining and really fun. And a really nice guy until we talk about Donald Trump. And then I'm an idiot. Because I don't like Donald Trump. And what's wrong with you? You don't love our country? And, you know, and it's kind of like everybody I live around. There's a few, and we have to... We have, like, secret signs that we give each other that we're not Trump fans.
Yeah, you carry the newspaper tucked under your left arm.
I haven't figured it out yet, but eventually we work it out. And there's, like, a couple people here. There's 150 home community I live in. It's a gated community. And there's about 10 here that I can actually talk to freely and openly. The rest of them, I can't tell them. I've told them, I said, when Trump got elected, one of them came up and said, hey, what do you think? I said, isn't this great? I said, no, it's the worst thing that's ever happened to the country.
Yeah, I've got a guy every now and then. He'll ask me, well, what do you think of Trump? And I just look at him and said, well, you know, I wouldn't pee in his mouth if his goddamn guts were on fire. And I get the, what?
He walked away and said, he just shook his head, walked away. And I haven't talked to him since. That's since 2016. He used to come over, he used to stop by and have a beer. I would stop by his house and have a beer. Nope. Not anymore.
Well, you know, fascism, Scott, has a seductive quality to it. Because you're constantly being told how great your country is and how you're great, and we could be even greater if it weren't for those others over there.
The others, yes. It's the others. It's always the others.
And in a fascist scheme, whoever the others are can shift.
You can. There is no label there. It's just other. Our country
in fascist Spain, it was the Republicans. In Nazi Germany, it was political dissidents, Jews, and people with handicaps, and gay people. Here, now, it's immigrants, Hispanics, African Americans, brown people,
right.
Liberals. I mean, they've really cast a wide net here.
I'm a liberal with a good tan. They don't like me. Plus, I'm educated and I read. And I try and explain to them why Fox News is like, you guys, don't you understand? You're not getting any news. That's not news. I say, watch CNN one day. Okay, turn off Fox News and watch CNN. I try and get them to MSNBC, but that's a really big jump for them. They'll just. Like,
I'll tell you what I get a kick out of is West Virginia Public Radio has taken. You know, it used to be as soon as the news was over in the evening, it was back to funeral home classical music. I love classical as much or more than the next person, but...
But it's, what, the dirges or...
It was just grim. But now they run the BBC World Service from like 9 p.m. to 2 a.m. And it's like listening to news from a different planet.
It's like I get Guardian. That's my major news source is Guardian. Plus I get Washington Post, New York Times, LA, and Louisiana, the New Orleans Picayune.
Didn't they just go out of business?
I haven't been getting any.
Or did they ceased paper publication? I know.
Okay.
They got swallowed up by a different.
Yeah, they're going to be.
But I saw their final day headline.
They're going to be one of the e-news conglomerates. It's like in Florida, we only have one paper. No matter where you live.
What the Miami. Well, there's the Orlando Sun Sentinel, and there's the Miami.
But most of them are owned by Gannett.
Well, yeah.
Which is USA Today.
Right.
And so it's all the same headline, all the same writers, all the same reporters. They don't have it. There's no local.
Well, I mean, that's not entirely true because, you know, the Epstein case got blown wide open because of a journalist, what's her name, Julia K. Brown at the Miami paper.
Right. Miami is the Miami Herald is good. Tampa Bay Times is good. And to be honest, there's one up in St. Augustine has a paper that these people go out and hunt down stories. And they love it. they're like...
Well, I mean, if you're a real reporter, it's what you want to be doing.
That's it. That's what they're doing. And it's but they're not a major publication that's... St. Augustine.
Well, I realize we're talking about Ohio and not Florida, but did you happen to catch the editorial from the Cincinnati Inquirer today?
No.
The editorial board actually put out an editorial begging, because Nitwit Nero has a Clavern rally in Cincinnati tonight.
Oh, no.
To, you know, try to draw attention away from the Democratic debates. Pageants.
Pageants.
And so the Cincinnati Inquirer put out an editorial asking the maggots to please behave themselves and not embarrass the state of Ohio.
Well, where's the debate? Aren't they in Detroit?
Yeah, the pageant's in Detroit, but no, okay. for the Trump rally in Cincinnati, the Inquirer put out an editorial asking the maggots to please not embarrass the state of Ohio at the rally tonight.
We don't want photos on the front page of the USA Today.
Or by chanting, lock her up or send her back or any of the other vile racist filth that these things have become so terribly well known for.
Well, Bob, they don't do that. You are swallowing the left-wing bullshit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, all right, well,
fake news.
I got told that today. I finally got his TV to work. I got his box all hooked up, and I got him hooked up so he could see his Fox News. And I said, you don't want to watch this. And he said, why? What do you watch? I said, well, I don't actually watch any TV news. I read the New York Times, the Washington Post, the L.A. Times, Houston Chronicle.
But is he internet savvy enough to go and read news online?
No. Oh, no.
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 Well, see, he's a captive. Will he vote?
No. Probably not. Well, if he does, he's going to vote for Trump.
Well,
he thinks Trump is the greatest thing that's happened to this country since he was born, and he's 90 years old, and that's what's driving.
Yeah, that's what you call old enough to know better.
He's not a dumb guy. He's an engineer.
If you're 90 years old, that means you've been around since 1929.
Right. He's senile.
Oh, is he? Okay. Huh.
That's the problem, is he doesn't remember anything. He watches, and Fox News has this...
He
really carefully planned every 20-minute cycle that brings it back into your consciousness.
Isn't MeTV on your cable system down there?
I don't have MeTV, no.
No, but I mean, his. Just switch it over to MeTV and say you'll enjoy, because they run Gunsmoke and Bonanza and shit like that.
Oh, no, he gets it. I have all that. But he...
Nonagenarians love that shit. Leave it to Beaver.
He keeps flipping back to Fox. And it's like, no, here, watch. It's like you like this stuff.
Nah, okay, that's okay. So you got to be a little subversive. You got to get that blocker thing.
Am I allowed to block the Nanogenarian
stuff? Well, and he says, you know, I can't find Fox anymore. And you say, oh, man, they went out of business. They went off the air.
that's not fair. But I'll do it.
Well, I mean, I think Fox is an overall elder abuse operation. So I don't think it's elder abuse to stop the abuse.
Because, well, the thing is, in our cable system down here, the news channel that comes up is Fox. Welcome to Florida. That's it. When you first get your news channel, I'm on AT&T. When you click on news, comes up Fox News.
Yep, it pops first. Well, let me ask you this, Scott.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, you've told us everybody around you are maggots, but I'm still trying to figure out who those 30% of likely Democratic voters are who want Joe Biden.
I have no idea.
And I keep being told that, for instance, he's got the numbers he's got in South Carolina because of the older African-American community.
It's the Hillary vote.
Well, I mean, maybe, but see, hold on. In November of 2016, I was a Hillary vote because I'm a Democrat and I know how to be one.
Right.
You vote for who you vote for whoever the nominee is.
We aren't at November yet.
But what I'm trying to what I'm trying to figure out though is, I mean, I just feel like I'm being hoodwinked. I don't.
You are.
I'm
the DNC. I mean, I know I'm in a scam.
Work with me. I know I'm in a bubble. Okay, we do. This is progressive liberal radio. I live in a maggoty place just like you do, only yours is warmer and sunnier and more prone to more prone to hurricanes.
I get hurricanes, yeah. Not fun. I got one coming up this week.
But I, for the life, you know, when I go and I talk to the people in my community that I know are, you know, Democrats and not Trump, not maggots, I don't know anybody who says, you know what? You know who just really, really makes me feel good about the idea of Joe Biden? Man, he's got great ideas, Joe Biden.
He doesn't have any good ideas.
Well, I think he does have some ideas. I'm not trying to tear him down, but I think he's trying to create this notion of he's going to be Obama's third term.
Well, no, he's going to be the third-party alternative. He's not going to be the Democrat.
Biden?
Democrats are no good. That's socialism.
No. I mean, he's running for the Democratic nomination. Come on.
Yeah, but he's going to run against socialism. Seems to be the anti-Democrat this year.
Which again reminds me.
All running against socialism.
Which again reminds me of the failure of American history. Because or the failure of the people to learn American history. I've got a. Hold on here. I got to get it opened right.
And do you have an FDR quote?
No, I've got a Harry S. Truman quote.
Oh, damn.
Because, you know, Harry, they said, give him hell, Harry. And he said, I don't give him hell. I just give him the truth. And they think it's hell.
Right.
When a Republican inscribes the slogan down with socialism, that's not what he means at all. What he really means is down with progress. Socialism is what they called public power. Socialism is what they called social security. Socialism is what they called farm price supports. Socialism is what they called bank deposit insurance. Socialism is what they called free labor organizations. Socialism is their name for almost anything that helps all the people.
Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid.
Right. Medicare didn't exist at the time, but precisely.
Right. Well, no, that's where it came from. Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. Bob, you're talking about. I'm sorry for your, you know, condition. Because I live in Florida, got all my Medicare and Medicaid.
Well, right, but you have a condition that necessitates.
Right, my kidneys failed, which put me into a different class of insurance providers. So I am now a complete, you know, I belong to the federal government. If they go down, I don't live very long.
Oh, by the way, you've got a suggestion from a fellow Floridian.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, our buddy Mark writes in and says, I think Scott might consider listening to Tampa's 88.5 FM WMNF, available on TuneIn, too.
Okay, I'll look that up. I listen to Nicole during the day. I listen to Nicole Sandler and whatever she's got running on her channel. But then I have, you know, I have TuneIn and I have the Sky One satellite XM, Sirius XM. So I get to listen to all kinds of good music.
Yep.
I'm a rock and roll sound engineer. I worked my life off inside studios 20 hours a day.
Hell, you're lucky you can still hear.
Well, I can't anymore.
I got a hellacious case of tinnitus.
Yeah, I do too.
Nobody who's ever had it quite understands how crazy making it can be.
I know where it is, and I know what it means. And when I mix, I know where my dropouts have to. I know where the dropouts are in the curve, and I have to boop boop boop. And
well, a buddy of mine is an audiologist, and he told me for the low Kmart price of about $10,000. He said there are teeny tiny mic. I mean, the hearing aids are almost invisible now.
Right.
And he said there's actually a tinnitus cure.
And, yeah, I know. I got the same thing.
And it's a pair of hearing aids, and they generate a frequency that negates the frequency of the ringing from tinnitus.
That you hear.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I'm an audio engineer. I know how that works. But it's like, okay, fine. I don't have $10,000.
Right.
Medicare won't pay for that. So I just live with the ringing in my ears.
But sometimes it's annoying as shit.
It is. Well, at 2:00 in the morning, wake up and it's like, ding.
Yeah, I've tried to describe it to people. It's like about a 2.5 kilohertz tone.
Yeah, that's it.
Somewhere between 2.5 and 5K tone.
Right. And sometimes it varies in frequency, and you wake up and you go, oh, God damn it. But it's not loud enough. It doesn't hurt.
No, it just makes you feel like you're losing your mind.
Right. Well, just like
I mean, I've got my cans on right now, and what are these? They're worn out and they need to be replaced. But they're Audio Technica broadcast reference cans.
Yeah, I have my Audio Technica.
Or studio 15s, reference cans. I can still hear the tinnitus in these things.
Right. I wear my earbuds. Actually, work better than. Because it cuts off all outside sound, and I just hear the earbuds. I've got a pair of, again,
from my friend the audiologist. I've got a pair of fitted, ear molds.
Mm-hmm.
In-ear monitors.
And they're
fantastic, but the problem is. And this is a little bit gross. Let's see. We're ruining dinner in the mountain times. There's that. But then when you use them, the little ports that the sound actually comes out of have filters, and they clog up in a hurry.
You got to clean them out. They're full of earwax.
And then they're these little orange sticks with new ones on the end. And you poke them in there, and then you pull them out, and ick. Because sometimes it seems like there's enough of that stuff for a candle.
Yeah, I know. I've been trying to make candles out of mine for, God, I've been doing sound for 40 years. What happened here? I lost my... There we are. Sorry, I got to change over to... the other earbud.
And I tell you what, weather like this, when the end of the program comes around, I can't get the headphones off my head fast enough. Because they are hot.
I used to use all the Audio Technica stuff. Well, I was a salesman for it, so I got it for free.
Oh, well, if we want to talk audio nerd stuff... there's some I got that Rode gizmo and it sounds great. Rode, Rode, the Rodecaster Pro, tiny little interface. And I'm hoping someday I'll be able to get, you know, they've got matched microphones that they've got, that the firmware is built in for, specifically tuned to these mics.
To the mics, right.
And they've got a wireless that can be run as a head worn that I'd love to try. And then there's the studio dynamic microphone that looks just fantastic.
Well, I'm a Sennheiser and EV person. These are microphones that have stood up for 100 years.
Oh, I know. I mean, I use an RE.
They know how to make microphones.
In the studio, I use an RE20. When I go on the road, I use a Beta 58, a Shure. But
it's for sure. Damn, Shure SM58s have this really great rep, and it's like, I'm going to really ruin people's dreams. An SM58 is a terrible microphone.
Well, the Beta 58 is a different is a slightly different iteration.
That's a studio one. I'm talking the SM58, that ball mic that you see every rock and roll singer ever playing with.
Yeah.
And they throw it on the stage. The only reason it's that good is because you can throw it on the stage.
Yeah, the thing I like about the Beta 58 is in a situation like a loud, noisy situation in a convention hall or something like that, that hypercardioid polar pattern really makes it harder for the room noise to sneak in.
Right. It's you've got your face.
Yeah. But in talking with John Fox, also an audio engineer down in Australia, Rode is an Australian product, and mm-hmm. And he was an Electra Voice Shure guy, and he started working with Rhodes, and he said they'll stand up to anybody else, and the fact that these things are matched to this Rodecaster Pro audio interface, I think it's got real potential.
Yeah, well, the one thing about an SM58 Shure microphone, you could drive the nails into the stage to hold the rug down for the drum set and pick the mic up, and it still worked. They lived. They did not die. And you had these people that really didn't know how to work microphones. They did not know how to sing. And they would come up on it and put their lips on the windscreen and scream into it. And it didn't kill your PA system. That's a very good quality for a microphone when you're doing rental sound engineer work.
Oh, no kidding.
That's what I did. I went out weekly. I went out 4 or 5 nights a week. I rented my gear, and I had to go out and play. I had to go out and watch people that had never had a sound system, a professional sound system in their life.
Okay, I've got a question coming in from Steve from Georgistan.
Oh, okay.
So when you were talking about throwing microphones around. Any idea what Roger Daltrey used to, swing the mic 30 feet on and catch it on a downbeat and without any thumping noises?
That was practice.
No, that was practice. Any idea what the mic was, though?
I'd have to see it. Let's see. Daltrey, that would have been probably an SM58. That was the era. You could take one of these. You can take an SM58 and literally drive nails. And
well, I remember the ad on the Beta 58, famously was a Beta 58 sunk upside down in a mug of beer. And you could take it out, shake it off, plug it up, and go.
Well, it didn't work in the beer?
Well, you had, there was the problem of trying to get the audio through the glass.
I had mics. I had a Crown, a PZM mic, and you could sit that underwater, put it in an aquarium, and it would pick up the vibrations from the glass.
You sound like the kind of troublemaker a buddy of mine was. He had a pair of Klipshorn loudspeakers. And, you know, they way back in the day, you know, they're made by hand in Arkansas and everything. And one night, in a fit of, I think, booze and hallucinogen-induced euphoria, they decided they wanted to hear what electricity sounded like.
Oh, no. So they plugged them in.
They stripped the wires and plugged them into the wall.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, they played for a little while, and then they just blew up.
I did that in the Waldorf Astoria, New York City, with a Sherwin Vega 30-inch speaker. They said it could reproduce the lowest frequency on Earth, and it was. We had 60 hertz. I mean, the building was shaking. It didn't blow the speaker up. The building was shaking.
That was my impression of a 60 hertz tone.
That's a 60 hertz tone. And, Matt, you do that on an 18-inch speaker, it's loud.
No, it'll rumble your gallbladder.
It's loud. There were doors opening everywhere. In the hotel. We were in the Waldorf Astoria.
See, we've started something here. David in South Carolina, Stan, works this side of the street, too. He said, SM58. I still use SM58 from 1982. It's been through bar fights, hurricanes. It still works fine.
I've dropped them in puddles. I've dropped them in. It's like, oh, no, they don't fail. They just keep working. But you got to get the old ones. The new ones don't work.
And Bill in Allentown up in PA says, my tinnitus sounds like a guitar pick sliding down one of the three high note strings of the guitar.
I wish mine was tunable.
Well, I wish I could just undo the strings, yeah. Right. Hey, Scott, I gotta I'm getting a couple other calls in. I gotta try to catch those too. But it's great hearing from you, man.
Well, I'm back, and I'm trying to get back into the rest of the real world. So,
well, we're right there with you, and rooting for you, and stand alongside.
Okay.
All right. You take care, man. Later.
Bye.
Bye. So, buddy, you'll know him in the chat room as VT Blom. Meanwhile, over to the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello. You did not just do that. Hello. Yeah, hello. I hear. You're bound to be there. Talking is helpful. Say something. Turn your other speaker down.
Hello?
Yeah, Jim. Jim.
Say something. Turn your other speaker down. Yeah, Jim.
Hello?
Yeah. Hi. Yeah, I've been hollering for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, you gotta turn your other speaker down.
Hold on.
Yeah, you've been definitely
yeah, consider it done.
Okay, yeah, over on your computer or whatever.
I'm here.
Yeah, what's up?
Hello.
Yeah, what's happening, Jim?
Speaker is turned off.
Good. What's happening?
Are you there?
Yes.
Maybe I should try to call back.
Might be a good idea.
All right. Bye.
Bye. All right. There's somebody. Is there somebody else there? No? Yes? Maybe? Some days the magic works. Some days it doesn't. Let's try this again. All right, Jim, are you there?
I don't know, Bob. There's something wrong here. I'll call you. I don't even get the message.
Oh, wait a minute. I know what it is. I know what it is. Are you there? Are you there? Do you hear me? Jim.
I'm here. You're sweet to see.
Okay. Okay. It was just a matter of a knob.
Well, it often is, isn't it?
Yeah, I got too many of them.
I can believe that. How are you?
It's a decent evening. It's been several reasonably decent days. I've been able to go outside and play in the yard and be a happy little boy.
Well, that's good. Nobody should ever get the freedom band and his goat feathers, you know?
Well, that, I'm better off when I'm out in the yard and moving around and breaking a sweat and doing stuff, and that's kind of why I so despise winter. It's so much harder to do that.
Well, that's true, but it is somewhat more energizing, you know, the cold as opposed to the heat. At least that's the way I feel about it.
But I think with the coming of winter, I'm gonna try to get a gym membership or something and just be a little bit more active and hopefully, keep the weight off and be in better shape. You know, when you're one of the great American uninsured, one of your better bets is trying to stay in reasonably decent physical condition.
No argument with that. That's for sure. Listen, I just want to say a few things. First, your friend in Florida, Mr. Scott, I wish him all the best and all the success in the world he might have in skydiving and overcoming his disability and disease, and I certainly feel for him. And I'm glad to hear that he called you, and apparently he puts a great deal of story in what you have to say, and that's good for him, and good for you too, and good for us.
Well, yeah, it's the nothing can replace conversation that takes place in goodwill and good faith.
Well, that's true. Absolutely. And speaking of the lack of all those things, conversation and good faith, my attention is turned to Fox News and its creator, Roger Ailes.
Yeah, you've seen the biopic, right?
Yes, I have.
And which network is that on?
Showtime.
Okay, yeah, I don't have it.
Well, you probably wouldn't want to see it if you did, but because it's really almost disgusting and nauseating in its truth and clarity.
So who do they have playing Roger Ailes?
Russell Crowe.
Oh, that's right, that's right, that's right, yeah.
And whoever made that man up for that role absolutely must have had Jabba the Hutt in mind. Because that's exactly
I think you just ruined my post-program snack, Jim. I ruin enough people's meals in several time zones. It's about time, I guess, that I got it dished back out to me.
Back at you, Fred. Back at you. But nonetheless, it is a good story and about Ailes, and the worst of all, his wife. Oh, God, she was a horror, or is a horror. I think Ailes has gone on to his long reward.
Yeah, he's pining for the fjords now. He's joined the choir eternal.
Well, I think it might be moaning and weeping, but, you know, that man is the most evil individual I have ever seen portrayed. Just about as evil as Adolf Hitler, Joseph Stalin, whatever.
He is absolutely menacing in the way he affected people's lives and the dirty tricks he pulled on people's lives, and he tried to destroy people, and it gave him great pleasure.
So does the film? So does the film present it in a straightforward fashion? I'm trying to figure out why anybody would greenlight a biopic about Roger Ailes.
Because he's such a horrible person, and he created one of the worst newsworks in the world, besides the Deutsche Nachrichten Bureau under Dr. Goebbels,
which was probably his model in the long run.
Precisely, at least Goebbels liked modern art. Roger Ailes, I don't think so. I mean, the guy was a true Nazi, and he wanted to hurt people, and he wanted to try to put one over on everybody.
You know, you see people like that, Jim, and you can't help wondering. I mean, we like to assume that babies are not born inherently bad. What took him down that dark and miserable path?
I don't know. I think he had a very bad relationship. It's pointed out that he had a very bad relationship with his father, and that he also had some other things that bothered him. And he ate. He was huge, and he had no respect or anybody, and therefore I don't think he felt that he had any respect coming up. Now, it points out that he may have started out as a Broadway producer, I'm not sure, and then he hooked up with Murdoch later on, and he even outdid Murdoch.
Well, do you remember, you remember Mr. Stress, right? Bill Miller? He used to call in a lot from Cleveland?
Yes,
too. Bill would tell the story of how he worked for Roger Ailes one time. He was called in to lay down a blues track with his harp on orders of Roger Ailes. Remember that story?
I remember that. Yes, sir. Indeed, I do. I don't think he had anything good to say about Roger Ailes either.
Oh, no. With any luck at all, Mr. Stress is kicking the ass of Roger Ailes in the afterlife.
Well, I hope Mr. Stress will go. This is a much better place than Roger Ailes deserves to be.
Well, maybe you can just go down to the gates of hell and tease him with ice cubes.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, that's for sure. But this biopic, it's really very good because it really tells us whole story about Fox News and the people who work there and what they tried to do, what they have done. It was all just a very menacing conglomeration of very bad people. Just very bad people. I can remember the first day I ever saw Fox News back in 1996, I believe it was, and I didn't know anything about it. And I had been on there like 90 seconds with the Fox and Fiends, and I said, this shit isn't for me. These people goddamn crazy, and they're going to cause a lot of trouble because there's so many people out there who really live by what they say. And you know, it's not even news, it's what, entertainment?
Yeah, infotainment, Jim.
Based on whose premise, my God, I don't know how these people get their twist on things, but they do so deliberately. And Ailes said he wanted the common man, and he didn't want any of those so-called intellectual liberals and people like that, because they were destroying this country. Destroying this country is what he said. And, you know, it's almost like a train wreck. I had trouble watching it because what I've always imagined to be, it's really accurately portrayed. And I will say again, if you get a chance to see it and you see the character that they built him into with Russell Crowe, from the neck up, he's Jabba the Hutt.
God, I think I'd have to shotgun a bottle of antiemetic before I could watch it.
You do, yeah, absolutely. If you don't want to have to take your appetite suppressant, take a suppressant. Look at this, but you know, it's well done, and I've got to give my tip of my hat to Russell Crowe and the people who created this, because he really portrays for me what kind of person Roger Ailes was. And his wife is even worse. Oh, God, she's just awful.
And just because of the philosophical mindset I have, to what end? To what end? What's the point in going through life and making people miserable just to come to your own shitty end itself? I mean, Roger Ailes, Roy Cohn, you know what I mean.
I sure do.
I mean, Ailes, right, standing there at the Fox Garden party at some executive's home, and one of the women at Fox is jumping on a trampoline, and he sleazes over and says, "I sure hope you're not wearing panties under there."
Oh, yeah.
God damn.
Oh, yeah. One scene opens up with him receiving oral sex. Another is him grasping any certain asses there in the Fox studio, and the machinations he would go to destroy anybody that he considered to be his opposite or his enemy. He was worse than Roy Cohn. Well, just about as bad. You got to be pretty bad to be like Roy Cohn. That's for sure. Oh God.
Well, I mean, evil has subdivisions.
Yeah, they do. And theirs is the non-gentrified portion of that particular neighborhood. That's for damn sure. But, you know, enough about that Fox News. I still pass by it. It's 48 on my table. And I still would just listen long enough just to hear which one. Steve Doocy is the stupid one. And that Brian Kilmeade, he's just a little shit.
Toad.
That's what he is.
I think, Jim, it was Dashiell Hammett who coined the phrase, "The cheaper the hood, the gaudier the patter."
I think
that actually comes from the Maltese Falcon.
I think it does. Absolutely, it does.
That's a line uttered by Sam Spade.
Yep. A great character, a good movie, that's for sure. And, you know, when I think of Dashiell Hammett, I think about his friend who wrote The Little Foxes.
Lillian Hellman.
Oh, God. Lillian Hellman, who wrote The Children's Hour. And there is another thing that she did, and it's portrayed in a movie with Jane Fonda called Julia. If you haven't seen that movie, please, if you can, find it. I won't say anything more about it, but I recommend it highly. It takes place in the early 19th century, the early 20th century. It goes into Nazi Germany and the adventures of Julia as her friend. And that's about all I can say, really. But I recommend it highly.
Sounds like a good one.
It is.
Well, anyway, I guess they've started the pageant by now, haven't they?
I don't know. You know what I'm watching? I'm watching the Home Shopping Network. I just love to see those people get up there and pair all this stuff. And they do a pretty good job of it, too. They kind of hornswoggle me for Christmas in July, so I've done my Christmas already, whatever there's going to be of it. That's for damn sure. But, you know, to me, it's just fun. It's, you know, they have a lot of neat things there. And a great amount of wonderful combustibles. Oh, Lord, you wouldn't believe it. Anyway, my dear friend Patches is here.
Yeah, I saw those photos of some of your kitchen gear. It looks like a pretty nice setup, Jim.
Well, we try. We cook, too. And, It's something to pass the time, and there it is, and there you have it. And this package is just sitting here, just looking at me like I'm just crazy as hell.
Well, she knows you better than most anybody else right now, so.
Yeah, well, you saw her pictures, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, I did.
She's a beautiful cat.
Oh, she's a gorgeous calico.
All cats to me are gorgeous, that's for sure. Rob, I've never met a cat I didn't like. That is for sure. And let me say again before I get off here, kudos to Lady B. Talk about incisive, accurate, clear, stylish, filled with substance, and all combined in a superb batter. Again, my hat is off to her.
Well, thank you, Jim. I know she appreciates it.
Well, Lady B, I hope wherever you are that you have a good time this evening and you can just float into oblivion if you wish. All right, well, listen, I'm going to get off here. I'm sure you have somebody else who might want to call you, okay?
All right, you take care, Jim. Have a good night.
Later.
Bye. Somebody, Jim, calling from not all too terribly far away from here. Looks like Jay Inslee's speaking. Let's check in.
We have had one of, if not the most innovative way to drive down pharmaceuticals for life-saving medications in the United States. That's a record of Washington State. I'd like to take to Washington, D.C.
Thank you. Thank you, Governor Inslee. Mr. Yang, I want to bring you in. You support a Medicare for All system. How do you respond to Governor Inslee?
Well, I just want to share a story. When I told my wife I was running for president, you know the first question she asked me? What are we going to do about our health care? That's a true story, and it's not just us. Democrats are talking about health care in the wrong way. As someone who's run a business, I can tell you flat out our current health care system makes it harder to hire. It makes it harder to treat people well and give them benefits and treat them as full-time employees. It makes it harder to switch jobs, as Senator Harris just said, and it's certainly a lot harder to start a business. If we say, look, we're going to get health care off the backs of businesses and families, then watch American entrepreneurship recover and bloom. That's the argument we should be making to the American people.
Thank you, Mr. Yang. Mayor de Blasio?
Yeah, I don't understand why Democrats on this stage are fear-mongering about universal health care. It makes no sense.
Well, okay. It could be that way, CNN. Naturally. No, it was Bill de Blasio anyway, so, you know, really kind of. Note coming in from Lady B. Tinnitus? We're members of the same club. I recently bought a sound machine from Amazon that plays a fan noise all night for me. I can't stand the silence anymore. At work, I live in my headphones. When I'm home writing, I'm listening to either music or news. I read somewhere that the tinnitus is your brain warning you that there's damage to your ears. They think the cure is to tell the brain to turn off the warning, like you would turn off a smoke alarm after you burn toast. You can't restore the hearing, but you can quiet your brain down. That'd be really cool. But will us poor radio personalities be able to afford it? Not at $10,000 a pop. Equipment-wise, I could never afford the best, but I've used it. My first radio job, we used Sennheiser mics and had Kenwood speakers for monitors. I had to borrow my boss's tattered foam Sennheisers until I saved up and purchased some JVC headphones for $50. Now I wear my M-Pow Bluetooth wireless at work. I got some cheap Sonys at home. That being said, I had a ball working in radio, and I still miss it. My current ringtone is FM by Steely Dan. Dude, you never stop loving radio. That's the truth. Once the bug bites you, you live with the sting. I love your show and on the things you say on the internet. No FCC interference. And no static at all. Indeed. Thank you, Lady B. For what it's worth, yeah, I sleep every night. Agnes tolerates it. I've got an app called White Noise on my iPad and a Bluetooth speaker. And I crank up some gray noise, and it seems to make it sort of counterbalances the tinnitus. But it sure does, you know, you can't just carry that around all the time. No. Meanwhile, Ron in Raleigh says, yeah, Bob, the debate's on. The pageant is on. The same bullshit as last night. moderators going all in on making Medicaid for All the bad guy. Well, of course, of course, of course. I think I'm going to have to check out, Chris Hayes is running a segment right now called The Coal Con about the Black Jewel bankruptcy and how badly it's screwing over Wyoming and Montana. Congratulations! Congratulations, Wyoming and Montana. You thought you were going to avoid the resource curse. Thanks for playing. Guess what? Your member of Congress, Liz Cheney, Wyoming, she's going to be as useless as tits on a submarine when it comes to dealing with the fallout from having the coal economy collapse in your state. Because she's Liz Cheney. Yeah, it's just how it works. Are we back yet?
Save their life. It is immoral, it is untenable,
Senator.
And it must change
up,
with
Senator.
Medicare for all.
Vice President Biden, your response.
Real quick. I have the only plan that limits the ability of insurance companies to charge unreasonable prices. Flat out, number one. Number two, we should put some of these...
You know, when he says it limits insurance companies, that's kind of a giveaway. That means there are still insurance companies.
Billion opioids they sell out there. They are misrepresenting the American people what need be done. And lastly, here's the deal. The deal is, let's figure out how this works. We immediately are able to cover everybody who wants to get off of their insurance plan they don't like, no matter what one it is, and buy into a Medicare option. Thank and they can buy the gold plan, and they're not going to have to pay anyway.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Thank you. Let's move now to immigration, please. Secretary Castro, you think it should no longer be a crime to cross the U.S. border illegally. President Obama's Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson, whom you served with, says that is a public declaration that the border is, quote, effectively open to all. How is he wrong?
Thank you for that question. You know, if you elect me president, you're not electing me to follow. You're electing me to lead. And open borders is a right-wing talking point. And frankly, I'm disappointed that some folks, including some folks on this stage, have taken the bait. The only way that we're going to guarantee that we don't have family separations in this country again is to repeal Section 1325 of the Immigration Nationality Act. That is the law that this president, this administration, is using to incarcerate migrant parents and then physically separate them from their children. My immigration plan would also make sure that we put undocumented immigrants who haven't committed a serious crime on a pathway to citizenship, that we do a 21st century Marshall Plan with Honduras, El Salvador, and Guatemala so that we can get to the root of this challenge so people can find safety and opportunity at home instead of having to come to the United States. That's how we can be smarter, more effective, and more humane when it comes to immigration policy.
Thank you, Secretary Castro. Senator Bennett, what's your response?
I disagree that we should decriminalize our border. This is personal for me. My mom's an immigrant, and she was separated from her parents during the Holocaust in Poland. And for those reasons, I was part of the Gang of Eight that wrote the immigration bill in 2013 with John McCain that passed the Senate with 68 votes. That gave a path.
Wait a minute. Is that timeout? Is there some political value to name-checking John McCain in a Democratic pageant? I mean, just because Julius Geezer shits on him and on his memory doesn't mean that he's some sort of gold standard for political courage. We saw his political courage go out the fucking window with George W. Bush. He sat there in South Carolina and let Bush and, you know, his filthy campaign claim that, well, you know, John McCain has one of them Negro babies. So, no.
And, by the way, there were members of us, Julian was there, members of Congress. They would not let us enter the place, members of the United States Congress. So I walked down the road, I climbed a ladder, and I looked over the fence. And I'm going to tell you what I saw. I saw children lined up single file based on gender being walked into barracks. The policies of this administration have been facilitated by laws on the book that allow them to be incarcerated as though they've committed crimes. These children have not committed crimes and should be not treated like criminals.
Senator Bennett, what's your response?
I think this is one in the end that we agree with. There's not a single person on this stage who, if we were president, would ever separate a child from their parents at the border. And that is what this administration has done in the American people's name. They have turned our border into a symbol of nativist hostility. The symbol of this country before Donald Trump was president was the Statue of Liberty. That should be the symbol of the United States of America, not Donald Trump's terrible.
Thank you, Senator Bennett. Senator Gillibrand, I'm going to bring you in. What's your response?
So I think when you talk about whether this should be a crime, you have to remember who we're talking about. When I was at the Texas border, I visited with women who had fled violence. A woman from El Salvador owned a small business. Gangs came to her and said, if you don't give us all your money.
You know, I can't help wondering if maybe the little monster who shot up the Gilroy Garlic Festival at some point in time kept his rifle loaded rifle under his bed. You know, like Kirsten used to brag that she did when she needed the checks from the NRA.
So this is who we're talking about, and they're not criminals. So I believe that we should have a civil violation. No president before President Trump enforced the law in the way he has enforced it, because he's using it as the crutch to lock up women and children, to separate mothers and babies, to put them behind bars. So I don't think we should have a law on the books that can be so misused. It should be a civil violation, and we should make sure that we treat people humanely.
Thank you, Senator.
You know, Senator Bennett, and I want to be fair about this. Senator Bennett is not a terrible senator from the state of Colorado. Senator Gillibrand, I guess New Yorkers are happy with her. She needs to be in the Senate. This Senate fetish, well, every senator up there, and regrettably, I include Senator Warren and Senator Sanders and Senator Harris. Every senator in this race has been rendered impotent by a dictatorial, self-appointed monarch in that body. And they are utterly powerless. And they can't even persuade their Republican colleagues to break ranks. That doesn't speak well of senators becoming president. It could be that the Senate is not the best place to go looking for a president, because they have these hidebound institutions that after a while change the way they think. I'm less willing to think that about Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders, but the institution has become toxic. And it's really unavoidable. Remember, I mean, you want to talk about a toxic institution, and I'll wrap up here in a minute. You want to talk about a toxic institution. In August of 2009, we finally got a 60-vote Democratic majority, a so-called veto-proof majority. Or not veto-proof, but filibuster-proof majority. We got it in August when Al Franken's election was finally certified. And that was slow-walked from hell. And no sooner did we get 60 votes than we lost it when Senator Kennedy from Massachusetts became ill with brain cancer, died, and wound up being replaced by a Republican, Scott Brown, because the Democrats in Massachusetts ran a horrible candidate. And so, with a 59 to 41 majority, the Democrats still were prevented from getting anything that came over from Nancy Pelosi's house, or virtually anything, done. That is the definition of a toxic institution. Just a little something to think about. Thorn in the Side Thursday comes tomorrow. Tomorrow begins a new month. Fundraising Free Radio is sadly over. I will say this in advance. If any of you enjoy seeing your money doubled, remember Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge in memory of our buddy Bruce is on the table for tomorrow. And the first $200 in will get doubled. So this isn't fundraising now. It's just a mention for tomorrow in case you want to get out in front of the curve. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Steve for moderating in the chat room this evening. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you to Brother Deacon Asa, Head On Live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 years, the 20th anniversary this year of standing at the forefront of the struggle for environmental justice and human rights in Appalachia. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air. At the end of every month, I'm reminded what a little community-made miracle this broadcast effort is. And I thank each and every one of you for your participation, however you so choose to participate. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.